We were definitely as hardcore as anybody because we dropped everything to come. Okay, we left everything to come. We didn't join the same. We joined to be revolutionaries. We joined to make the revolution. We joined to be Panthers.
In 1973, Michael Torrence is a 22-year-old Black Panther. He's dedicated himself to the cause and obeyed every command. He's a true soldier. But 5 years of complete devotion to the Panthers has taken a toll. Now, Torrence is desperate to focus on his personal life, just for a while. But to do this, he needs to get permission, and it's got to come from the top. Torrence shows up at the Lamp Post. It's a bar in West Oakland where Panther leader Bobby Seale is having a birthday party. The two men huddle in a corner and talk for a while, but it's all good. Seale gives Torrence his blessing for some time off. Torrence is relieved, but as he's making his way out of the bar, someone tells him that Huey Newton wants to see him. And he wants to see him now. Newton is Seale's comrade and co-founder of the Panthers. For years, Newton has been a strong and charismatic leader, but recently his moods have been unstable. Tonight, for whatever reason, he's agitated. Torrence is ushered into a back room, and there, flanked by a couple serious enforcers, is Newton.
And he says, well, comrade, I hear that you want to leave us. He said, well, do you want to leave bad enough to die? And do you really want to leave bad enough to die? I don't understand the question. And Joan takes a gun and puts it to my head. And no, comrade, I don't want to die. He said, okay. So this is what's going to happen. You say, but comrade, would you tell this brother not to talk what I'm talking? And so the comrade give me a boot to the mouth. I stand corrected. Okay then. So you say, all power to the people. All power to the people.
So Michael Torrence has just been persuaded to rethink his request for some time off. And a pistol to the head, it's hard to argue with.
From Watts to Brownsville, we find misery.
But there won't be no more.
Won't be no more.
There won't be no more.
Won't be no more.
Torrence's 5 years in the Panthers have been intense. It's been a roller coaster life of extremes. Many times he's picked up a gun. But he's also picked up a microphone. Now, Torrence didn't join the Panthers to sing, but the movement's Minister of Culture gave him and three other young soldiers a special assignment for the cause. It was a musical cadre whose mission was to spread the seed of social revolution through the Trojan horse of funk and soul. It was an R&B group called
The Lumpin'!
The Lumpin's music is explosive, the band is powerful, and so is the message. The Lumpin' worked non-stop for the cause, killing it wherever they perform. San Francisco, LA, New York, Philly, and throughout the Midwest. But it only lasts 11 months. Then things in the Black Panther Party begin to implode. What you're about to hear is the story of the rise and fall of an unlikely R&B group born out of social upheaval. But why did the Black Panthers even need a musical act? Why did they need a band whose militant agenda would put them up against the forces of prejudice and law and order with every downbeat? The thing is, the Lumpin' were not out to make hit records. They were out to change American culture. It's a journey unlike that of any other band, and Michael Torrence was at the center of it. In 1966, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale co-found the Black Panther Party. They're both students at Merritt Community College in Oakland. Within a few years, the party offers educational programs, food service, free medical care, and drug rehab to the Black community. And the Panthers lead the fight against rampant police brutality.
Officers,
By the end of the 60s, change is in the air, and the Bay Area is ground zero.
San Francisco at that time, we were in the Fillmore District. It was very, very high tension. Police were riding, you know, four or five deep. If you were out selling your papers, they would come and harass you, snatch your papers, maybe arrest you, threaten you. But at the same time, there was a lot of energy. And that's the best thing about it. You could really feel the energy, particularly among, you know, younger people, that we felt we could really make a change. Not only could we make a change, we were going to make a change. There was this commitment to die if necessary.
Those papers are the weekly Bible of party information, a publication called The Black Panther. And the Howard Quinn Printing Company on Alabama Street is where the lumpin' story begins.
Wednesday night was distribution night, where we would get out the paper. Everybody would come.
That's James Mott, now known as Satoru Ned. In 1970, he's newly arrived from the Sacramento chapter. All the future members of the Lumpen are in attendance that Wednesday night. Torrance, Mott, William Calhoun, and Clark Santa Rita Bailey. They all have musical backgrounds ranging from church choirs to pro-level experience, but when they meet, they're just loyal young soldiers taking orders along with everybody else.
It was a community gathering in Fillmore. And I want you to imagine at that time, Fillmore has not, like it is now, changed to the gentrification. It was Fillmore.
And on those distribution nights when various chapters would all come together in the Bay Area to get the paper out, we would sing.
And we would sing at that point just doo-wop songs. So one night I went over there and the three of them were singing, so I joined in. And we started harmonizing. We just blended in so cool.
And then what we would begin to do was we just would put other words to the popular songs, because we would be singing what we called revolutionary songs, things to, you know, encourage us in the struggle. In terms of the lumping, it kind of grew out of that, just us singing together. Part of, I guess, the tradition of just singing while you work.
It's a typical Wednesday night. The four Panthers are at the print shop, stacking and racking and harmonizing into the night. But this time, there's somebody new listening, Emory Douglas, the party's Minister of Culture.
So after I got back to Central, Emory comes in and says, "Hey, brother, Comrade Jay." I said, "Yeah, Emory." He says, "You know, everybody relates to music." I said, "Yeah, Emory, they do." He said, "You guys sound good." He said, "We can create a group, and the group could be part of the Minister of Culture, where we could be able to get that message out in the music."
Oh, yeah. Well, that was from when I first heard them.
Emory Douglas is the brilliant style guru and visual artist whose iconic posters and flyers helped brand the movement.
I just made suggestions, possibly adding some social justice context to the lyrics.
At this point, Bobby Seale and Huey Newton are both behind bars. So Douglas approaches Panther's chief of staff, David Hilliard. He understands the value of spreading the word through music, and he greenlights the project. He also gives the group a name, The Lumpen. It's a play on Karl Marx's idea of the lumpen proletariat, the lower class that would rise up to crush the capitalist power structure.
At the time the party was coming about, political education, political awareness was growing tremendously.
Billy Jennings is a former Panther and the party's longtime historian. He was tight with the Lumpen members 50 years ago and still is to this day.
In 1968 alone, James Brown put out a song that really changed everything, because black people prior to that time were referring to themselves as Negro. You know, James Brown came out and say, "We're black and we're proud." And once that record came out, you could never go back and say you're a Negro. You can never go back.
Say it loud. Say it loud. One more time. Say it loud.
James Brown couldn't have did that in 68 if there wasn't a group like the Black Panther Party that had set up a foundation of knowledge already.
Well, Emory was a minister of culture. So recognizing the role of music historically in Black people's struggle and just as part of our culture, period, then he began to say, well, we can do something with this. You guys sound decent together anyway because, you know, we just clicked like that. And so he encouraged us to put something together.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't like, okay, guys, we started at 9, 5 o'clock. Your day was never ending. You might, if you were able to get some time, hey, look, we got 45 minutes to rehearse.
Whatever rehearsal we would do, we would have to do that after whatever other assignments or duties we had. So we had to go sell the papers. We had to do the breakfast program. We'd have to do the garbage run. We'd have to do security. We'd have to do whatever it is that any other Panther would do.
From the Panthers' perspective, the Lumpen was not about show business. It was about contributing to the revolution.
As a matter of fact, for us, it was a point of pride to prove, you know, that we were 100% Panthers. Singing for us was just political work. And if they said the next day, okay, that's it, fine, because we didn't join for that. You know, if I was really about that, I could have been trying to do it out there in the world. I could have been out there trying to get paid. We never got paid. It was just, if this is how we can be helpful, if this is how we can be useful, if this will advance the cause, then this is what we'll do, you know. But it was always, we follow orders.
And now, only a few months since they were harmonizing to the oldies at the printing plant, their orders are to get on stage and get to work. Educate the people, spread the word, and earn money for the party. The Lumpen assemble a 6-piece interracial backing band from local players sympathetic to the cause. They're called the Freedom Messengers. By the summer of 1970, the group is performing at rallies, community gatherings, and Panther events around the Bay Area. And they're good. They're tight. It's a professional show on par with almost any act. They've got the energy of James Brown and the dance moves and harmonies of the Temptations. But the lyrics are all about what the Panthers are all about.
And at that time, Bobby Seale had just been arrested in New Haven. And the first thing that we put together actually was Bobby Must Be Set Free.
That song, titled Free Bobby Now, was recorded at a studio in San Jose in August of 1970. Bill Calhoun, the group's songwriter, thought the session was intended to be a demo, but the Panthers decided to release the single as is, putting another one of Calhoun's songs, No More, on the flip side. The record was released on the Panthers' own Seize the Time label, with credit to Black Panther Party Productions. It was promoted in the party newspaper and sold at live shows and Panther events. Any profits were funneled straight back into the party.
They say that he killed a brother, yeah. But this we know it just can't be, yeah. He's proven his love for his people. That's why Bobby must be set free. We're saying Bobby must be set free.
They took the craft seriously.
That's Ricky Vincent. He's the author of Party Music, the inside story of the Black Panthers band and how Black Power transformed soul music. It's a subject he knows well. His mother was an early Panther.
When they did People Get Ready by Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions, they hit those notes that you had to hit that shows respect for those aspirations that were in that song in 1964, 65. The Lumpen flipped the lyrics, obviously, and instead of saying, people get ready, there's a train a-coming, they said, people get ready, the revolution's come, right? You don't need a ticket, you need a loaded gun. And it was like, wait a minute, that is soul music the way it's supposed to be sung, but oh, those are not lyrics the way we've heard them before.
We said people get ready.
Ah!
The Lumpens start headlining their own shows. Their single isn't getting radio play. Free Bobby Now is considered just too controversial, but word of mouth and constant promotion in the Panther newspaper are drawing crowds. The group are gigging weekly, doing benefits and playing college campuses up and down the West Coast. And when they're not headlining their own shows, they're on bills with the Grateful Dead, Carla Thomas, and Curtis Mayfield. And not only is the music on fire, but the live show takes choreography to a whole nother level.
Nonstop. Once we hit the stage, nonstop. Even mixed in a dance routine where we would act out, and brothers on the block playing dice, and James Mott would be a cop, and he would come and harass one, and he'd be beating his brother up. Oh, that was funky Broadway. That's what it was. He'd be beating him up with the club, and I'm watching it. And then I'd finally get disgusted and said, I'm not going to take it anymore. And I would jump in and jump on the cop, and then Clark and I together would beat the cop down. So it wasn't just the singing, it was the choreography, the dancing, but the whole experience was something that they hadn't seen before. They'd seen it, but they hadn't seen it like that.
In the winter of 1970, the band hits the road for a tour of the Midwest and the East Coast. The crowds are enthusiastic, but tension is in the air.
And I'll never forget this.
David Levinson is the Freedom Messengers' 19-year-old sax player. After a show at the University of Minnesota, a snowstorm is kicking in. The band is packing up their gear when they're approached by members of the Black Student Union.
These guys from the student group, they come out and they're got all there. They look like a military junta. Hell, the black beret, the black boots. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Oh, well, who are those white guys? Excuse me? They're part of the Lumpin' Band. Well, you know, they can't stay. Well, he told them, look, you motherfuckers, we're not staying if they're not staying. I said, this is a people's revolution. And these are our brothers that we stand by.
That's just a small but very real example of the kind of camaraderie and kind of unity that we felt. So there never was any racism promoted for or practiced by the Black Panther Party at all.
The Lumpin' are also in the crosshairs of the cops wherever they go. Late one night, after a college show in New Jersey, the police follow the band down an empty road heading out of town. James Mott.
Get out the car. They knew who we were, and it was pitch dark when they pulled us over. We were like, this is it. They're going to kill us. You know, the general rule is back then, go to a lighted area. Well, what they did was one car got in front of us, slowed down, and the other one got right behind us. And they waited for that real dark area to pull us over. This was part of the intimidation, right? Yeah, about four of them, they was grinning. Sing for us. So we started singing, what was that song? As we stroll along together. We sang it, we was in harmony. And who are these guys? What's all that in the back? They made them pull out all the band equipment and miss messing with them. Okay, you can load it all back up again. I'm going to still kill you fuckers. This is the kind of language they tell us, right? And they were just to harass us, to let us know. We're watching you. We know who you are.
The Lumpin' are battling another force besides the authorities, and it's coming from within the party.
There were people in the party, some in leadership, some in rank and file, that say, yeah, you know, these guys are going to think there's something special.
If it wasn't for Emory, I don't think the Lumpin' would have came about, because Emory's the one who had the juice. And there was people that wasn't into the Lumpin'. They didn't think revolutionaries should be doing that kind of thing. But there were older people, too. You know, they wasn't R&B people. They were blues people. And during that time, there was a difference. Because, like I said, most of the leadership of the party was Southern guys. Southern guys like blues. We are young guys. We like R&B. So that's why they never really got any more hired than they were, because they were always related to as Panthers first.
Well, I think some people may have thought of it as not being important, that not understanding how important the culture was to getting the message out.
But that didn't stop them. It's November 10th, 1970, at Merritt College in Oakland. It's the alma mater of Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. Tonight, to a packed auditorium, the Lumpin' will get the message out.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, the Black Panther Party very proudly presents The Lumpin'!
Bear in mind, this group has been together for less than a year. While almost everybody else in the San Francisco music scene has been getting high and jamming, the Lumpin' have been working as full-time revolutionaries, pursued by the police and the FBI, and they still got this together. And tonight is special. The show is being recorded for a live album, and the group pulls out all the stops. Billy Jennings is there with his fist in the air.
It was one of the best shows in my life because the audience was electrified. You know, once the Lumpin' came on and the band started playing, you would hear them repeat something to the crowd and the crowd would throw it back. Like when they say all power to the people, the crowd say all power to the people with a force. And when they said death to the fascist pigs, it said death to the fascist pigs.
All power to the people!
If you just listen to the people's feedback alone, you can just get high on that.
Yeah.
They were killing me, boy, when I heard that. And even to this day, when I hear it, it just gives me that revolutionary enthusiasm, you know, because everybody was on the one that night. We were thinking about the same thing, you know, revolution.
The show was an undeniable success, but no album ever appeared. The master tapes made that night went missing and have never been found. Some have suggested they were confiscated by the FBI. It's also possible they were mislabeled and disappeared in the chaos and discord of the time period. Or they could be decaying in an attic somewhere, long forgotten. Only a grainy, multi-generation cassette of the show has ever surfaced, but it captures the raw power of the band. As 1971 arrives, the Panther Party leadership is in chaos. Bobby Seale is still in prison in New Haven. Eldridge Cleaver, the Minister of Information, has fled to Algeria to escape an attempted murder charge on an Oakland cop. In a CBS interview with reporter Mike Wallace, Cleaver makes his feelings about violence against authority figures abundantly clear.
When the American people hear that you want to shoot your way into the United States Senate, take off the head of a senator.
And take off the head of Richard Nixon, you see?
Well, what does that mean? This is rhetoric?
This is not rhetoric.
In February of 71, Cleaver and Huey Newton appear on the live TV show AM San Francisco. Newton is recently out of prison after serving almost 2 years for manslaughter, and a serious falling out has been growing between the men. Now it's coming to a head. For this interview, though, neither one is actually in the studio. The show is broadcasting a live phone call. When AM San Francisco booked these men, the producers expected things might get heated. And they were right.
We've got lots of things coming up here on AM this morning. Lots of things that you'll like to see, and we're looking forward to them, too, right here on AM.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah, you got the bombshell this morning. Well, very embarrassing for me. So I'm warning you now, or notifying you, that the intercommunal section, you hear?
Yeah.
The intercommunal section is expelled.
That's not the best way to deal with that.
Well, this is the way I'm going to deal with it.
Well, then I think you're a mad man too, brother.
But I'm not a coward like you, brother, because you run off to get little Bobby Hutton killed. But I stay here and face the gas, you see? So you're a punk. You understand?
I think you've lost your ability to reason, brother.
Hey, brother, you heard what I call you. That's what I feel about you now.
Okay,
you're
a punk.
So what you just heard was two of the leaders of the Black Panther Party firing each other from the Black Panther Party on live TV. This bizarre public fight factionalizes the group, which falls completely into disarray.
You always kind of come back out with some different ideas about how things should go. Plus, you got the split, you know, to the point that, unfortunately, in some cases, you got Panther against Panther, depending on whether you were with Eldridge's vision or whether you were with National Headquarters.
Because well, Eldridge was still promoting violence, right?
Right. You and I were talking, we're moving toward a survival program. Even we had to change because all of our original songs was picking up the gun.
Outside my window, I hear shotgun sing. This is the fight that oppression brings. A victory for the people, a pig gloves in the street. We got to move now to make it all
come. Now I'm
there were some other things going on internally in terms of some of the things that was being done by Huey that I didn't agree with, I didn't join for. And it wasn't about the police. See, that was the thing that was bad about it. I was never scared about the police. It's a bad thing when you get more concerned about the people that you work with than you do with the cops.
As the atmosphere within the party becomes more desperate, interest in the group from those in power dwindles to almost nothing. The Lumpen members are reassigned. They're taken off of R&B duty and put on security detail. Their days as a singing group are numbered.
No, it wasn't justified. It could have been worked out, but you know, if you had people who wanted to exercise their position as being in charge, all those things can play into it. Petty spitefulness, all that.
We never thought of ourselves as anything other than Panthers. And the Lumpen was a cadre, a unit for a cultural purpose. You know, we loved it. We enjoyed it. But in the big picture, it's just another assignment. And so when the situation and circumstances change, then you move on to the next assignment, you know. And we didn't really have time to mourn about it because that's exactly what happened.
On May 23rd, 1971, in Sacramento, the Lumpen play their final gig. A few days later, Bill Calhoun decides to leave the party completely. He was the group's songwriter. So, only 11 months after it began, the band is done. But the Panther Party is still Michael Torrence's life. It's all he's known since he was a teenager.
You know, I was loyal to it. I had committed my life to it. I had every intention, as far as I was concerned, at least at that point, that was going to be my life.
Which brings us back to that night in 1973 at a bar in West Oakland. The night Torrence talked to Bobby Seale and asked for some time off from the Panthers.
So anyway, I go to Bobby at his birthday party at the lamppost, and I sit down with him, you know, and I said, well, Chairman, I have a daughter. She needs some support. Plus, I'm having these little anxiety attacks. It's affecting my work. It's affecting my effectiveness. I don't want to quit. I don't want to leave, but I need some time. Get myself back together, and then I'm coming back. And Bobby was real cool with me on it, you know. I'm crying. I'm shedding tears.
Torrence is leaving the bar when Huey Newton calls him back upstairs. He says the party will contribute $50 a month for Torrence's daughter's support. Then Newton puts a gun to Torrence's head and says this.
Okay, then. We sent $50. But you say, all power to the people. All power to the people. So I stuck around. And about 6 months later, one of the guys from Chicago comes by. And he says, you still want to go? He said, because we can't afford to pay for your kid no more. you can go now. You can leave now. Okay. Well, all right, then. Talk to the people now.
And that's it. Michael Torrance is out of the Black Panthers.
And it was traumatic. What was traumatic for me was leaving. What was traumatic for me was what it had become.
Did you feel betrayed by
Yes. This? Absolutely. Absolutely. Betrayed. Angry. Bitter. Frustrated. Yes. It took me a while to get back to what they call living in the world. Because the party was my world. That's what you're asking me. Who am I? I said, I'm a Panther. You know, that's what I was, that who I was. And then to lose that, you know, and try to get back to adjusting out here, you know, and trying to get a job, you know, and where can I put on my resume? where you been the last 5 years?
But Torrance did have something on his resume that worked outside of the revolution. The lumpen. It got him a job. Torrance wound up singing behind Marvin Gaye, and he appeared on the singer's 1974 album, Marvin Gaye Live. It was recorded just a few miles away from where the Lumpin' recorded their own live album just 4 years earlier in Oakland. Torrance went on to write, produce, and sing for other artists for the rest of the 70s. Though he parted ways with the Panthers almost 50 years ago, the whole experience is still very much a part of him.
As far as the Black Panther Party is concerned, I don't regret anything. I was with people that these things last a lifetime. So like me and Calhoun and James and some of the other ones, you know, we still. And I wouldn't take that back for anything. We made some mistakes, yeah. But at the time, and for what it was right on time. And I was just glad to be a part of it, you know. We didn't, like I said, we never did it to get famous. We never did it to get rich. We did it because we really wanted to do something for our people and make a change.
A pig, yes, on our streets. And poverty. This way of life. We're closing the door. So there won't be no more.
Thank you.
آرزوم بودی پیروزی خر قوغن از توالت روزی خر ادمیز تپلیز روزی خر لامزبشی تیوریز روزی خر تلی سمخاروز پاسی خر سخیویت پلانه تا مارسی خر بول بولیز تویز مایسی خر تو ار چمی Mavisi Shen tvisu galo Mitsan khmaze Agara var katsi chkoaze Marto shen khar mitsa tsaze Mochveneba planetas Chemo khato, chemo gmerto Shen suratze santla dvento Tov tskhalo bagai meto Lamas Sanam shen sakhesam zirde Suvitsotskhle ardaberde Marto shen kebasav tserde Yetim gurji shen
This is Nola. I'm no one anymore. In my invisible old life, I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore. I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore. I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore. I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore. I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore. I don't wanna feel like I'm no one anymore.
باز به شروعش بگذار، تو زیبایی و بی‌پروایی و من که از این دلتنگی بیمار، با من حوصله کن در این شب کور، تو همیشه دلیار. شب بیدار منی، همه جا تکرار منی، گرچه بی من گرچه که دور، دل من دل یار منی. تو شب بیدار منی، همه جا تکرار منی، گرچه بی من گرچه که دور، چرخید و هوس چو گیاهی مرموز روید، او روید و درخت از این همه درد چو نگاهم خشکید. ماه پنهانه و راه دشوار، من در حال غروبم این بار، باش در خوابم و در بیدارم و من رو در این تنهایی نگذار، با من حوصله کن در این شب کور، تو همیشه دل یار. تو شب بیدار منی، همه جا تکرار منی، گرچه بی من گرچه که دور، دل من دل یار منی. تو بگو درمان تو چیست، تو بگو دل یار تو کیست، تو بگو اینها همه رو سببی جز فاصله نیست. تو شمه